Our democracy is hanging by a thread, but we know it's not about just winning and losing each battle. It's about persistence and building resilience.
That's why we're launching the Practivist Pod, the practice of activism made practical.
If you're looking for ways to get engaged or just for ways to stay sane, we want to help you navigate what comes next.
It's an exciting collaboration with political dynamo Jess Craven, author of the Chop Wood, Carry Water newsletter.
And grassroots activist Steve Pearson, host of the How We Win podcast.
Every week on the Practivist Pod, we're going to have important conversations with changemakers, give you practical ways to make an impact, have some fun, and inspire hope.
This is more than a podcast. It's a place for our community to grow our practice of advocacy for justice, equity, and progress.
Action is the best antidote for anxiety. So subscribe to the Practivist Pod today.
Our press secretary gave alternative facts to that.
My goal in this deposition was to be truthful, but not particularly helpful.
Welcome to Unspun, the podcast that makes you better at finding the truth. The way people get news is changing. It used to be that there were many reporters who would research stories and write articles, but now politicians and famous people share information directly with you on social media and the internet. That means you find out things fast, but it's up to you to make sure the information's actually accurate. And newsmakers don't always do their part. The temptation to manipulate information is strong. They bend the truth to deceive so that they can avoid accountability, so that they can advance their agendas. When you recognize these agendas, you can sometimes find out what's real. And we're at a crossroads where anyone can share anything online, so it's important to sharpen your critical thinking skills. Finding that deception before it goes viral is pretty much a survival skill now, and we're going to do it together. Let's get Unspun. Hello, Truth Seekers, and welcome to this week's Unspun. Today, we're all about verification. What works, what doesn't, and how good are you likely to be at it? Is it time to get rid of professional fact checkers and put you in instead? Let's find out in this week's episode. But before we get started, I'd love to hear back from you about what topics you are interested in for upcoming episodes. You can leave a comment and a review on the platform you're listening to me on right now, or you can email me at theunspunpodcast@gmail.com. Seriously, I do all this for you, so I'd love to hear your thoughts. Okay, let's get Unspun. So, last week, Facebook and Instagram, their parent company Meta, announced a pretty monumental decision. You know, a bombshell, you might say. They're ending their fact-checking program with professional fact-checkers. You know, the one with the little fact-checked labels, and it's been a mainstay for 4 years now. Those little labels have been kind of a guidepost in this world of online information. And it was a reaction in a lot of ways to the weaponized disinformation from the 2016 U.S. election and other elections in Brazil and India and other countries. And this weaponized disinformation was covered by The Guardian and Channel 4 in the U.K. and a bunch of other media outlets, too. And the idea was that the platform, the thing that carried the messages, could take some responsibility in stopping bad information. And now they're just saying, well, you're on your own, folks. So instead of using experts, they're turning to a system that's similar to Community Notes, which is on X, formerly Twitter. And that's a pretty big change. You know, it's a radical move. Mark Zuckerberg, the head of Meta, introduced the change and argued that their current system was making too many mistakes and it was flagging harmless content as misinformation. And the impact of that could be hindering open discussion. So basically, Meta is saying that their algorithms are overreaching, censoring things that shouldn't be censored. They did actually claim that 1 or 2 out of every 10 enforcement actions that they took were likely a mistake, meaning it was content that didn't actually violate their policies, but it was being removed. And that's a pretty big admission. It is. But what's the solution here? How does switching to a community-based system actually solve this problem? They're really banking on the wisdom of the crowd, and they think that by empowering users to, you know, flag potentially misleading content and then add context, they can create a less centralized and more democratic approach to this whole fact-checking thing. But is that really less biased? I mean, are we just treating the potential bias of a few experts for the potential biases of a much larger group of users? That's the key question, and one that critics are really yelling about a lot right now. Some people are arguing that the move is less about security and more about avoiding responsibility. Think about it. Switching to this crowdsourced system deflects criticism, and the company can just claim that, you know, they're providing a platform for users to decide what's true. So it's a way to sidestep accusations of censorship and local bias, maybe. Okay. And it's worth noting that although Meta's decisions have come in the middle of a lot of political pressure, particularly in the U.S., some politicians have accused the company of censoring conservative viewpoints. And so this could be seen as an attempt to maybe appease those critics. And that's a whole nother layer. And I wonder, are they really committed to fighting misinformation? Or are they prioritizing engagement and just avoiding controversy? I mean, it's a very complex situation, and it's really hard to disentangle Meta's motivations. What we can say for sure, though, is that this decision has very major implications for the future of online information. So let's dig a little bit more into this idea of community nodes, because it's not a completely new idea. Twitter, or X as it's now known, tried something similar with Birdwatch, which then evolved into what they called community nodes. Studies on Birdwatch and versus the crowdsourced fact checks found that they were often just as accurate as those done by professional fact checkers. So that's interesting, right? It can definitely challenge the assumption that only experts debunk misinformation effectively. So, if this crowdsourced approach has shown potential, why are people so skeptical of Meta's decision? You know, there's also real concerns about whether or not a system like this can actually work at scale. So we're talking Facebook and Instagram here. So that is billions of users. And the amount of information that flows through those platforms every day is just immense. So, you know, even if individual users are capable of giving accurate fact checks, can they really keep up with that much content? That kind of seems like an impossible task. It's a really massive challenge, and it's one that Meta's going to have to address if they want this to work. They're going to need to find ways to encourage people to do the checks. They'll need to ensure that diverse viewpoints are represented and to keep bad actors from, you know, gaming the system. And that's a lot. Personally, I don't feel confident that that would actually happen. As I've said before, social media companies are businesses, right? Their purpose is to make money, not really to serve the community. And incentives and prevention, that costs money. And what would be more efficient would be to make users think that the information is good enough so that they keep using the platform, because they make their money off of eyeballs, not off of the truth. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about those professional fact checkers. What kind of training they undergo? What makes their approach to fact checking different from an average user scrolling through their feed? I think it's important to remember that professional fact checking isn't just about, you know, Googling something and making a snap judgment. You know, they're not just people with strong opinions, they're trained professionals, and they approach fact-checking systematically. Professional fact-checkers undergo extensive training, and they learn how to meticulously investigate claims. They verify their information with credible sources, and they present their findings in a way that's both transparent and unbiased. So it's almost like detective work. It is. They dig deep, you know, consulting primary sources, academic research, government data, expert interviews, anything and everything they can get their hands on to figure out how accurate the claim is. Because it's not just about checking facts, it's about analyzing the context, right? Identifying potential biases, understanding the nuances of what's being presented. So they're really looking at the bigger picture, considering the intent behind the information, dissecting logical fallacies, ensuring that their analysis is as comprehensive as possible. It's interesting, you know, to get a peek behind the curtain, because I think for most of us, we just see that little fact check label and we can move on, right? We do. We don't necessarily think about what went into earning that label. So let's talk through the process. What are the steps involved in, you know, a claim going from being flagged to having a published factual report? Okay, well, typically it starts with the claim being flagged either by users themselves or by algorithms that are scanning for potential misinformation. So it's kind of like an early warning system. Once that claim is flagged, then the real investigation begins. So fact checkers research. They dive into all the sources I was talking about, and they're basically building a case. As they gather information, they're also evaluating it. So they're looking at source credibility, identifying potential biases, figuring out the overall strength of the supporting information. So it's not just about finding facts, it's about thinking and really deeply understanding information literacy. And then once they've finished their investigation, they publish a detailed report outlining everything they've found. In these reports, they usually break down the claim, the evidence they've gathered, their analysis, their conclusions. And all of this is really aiming for transparency so that, you know, readers can understand the reasoning behind their assessment. You think about it, they're showing their work. And they want to empower readers to understand how they arrived at that conclusion, not just giving a yes or a no or a true or a false. Okay, let's circle back to community-based fact-checking. As I said, it's shown surprising similarities in its effectiveness to professional fact-checking. How do they really stack up against each other? It's quite remarkable because studies comparing the effectiveness of community and professional fact-checking have found very minimal differences in a bunch of cases. And this really does suggest that crowdsourced fact-checks can be just as effective in reducing misinformation as those conducted by trained professionals, which is pretty mind-blowing considering the difference in training and resources. But I don't think we can say expert fact-checkers are obsolete now. While these findings are significant, there's still some really valid concerns about the potential pitfalls of community-based fact-checking, especially when you're talking about bias and about just the sheer volume and complexity of online information. It's kind of a mixed bag. So what are the limitations of community-based fact-checking? Where does the crowd fall short? I think one of the biggest concerns is bias. We, as humans, we tend to gravitate toward information that confirms our existing beliefs, and this can be amplified in a crowdsourced system. Since we're getting a, you know, what we think is an objective view, we end up in echo chambers where misinformation is actually possibly reinforced. If people are mostly flagging content that challenges their own views, the system can become less about accuracy and more about silencing opposing voices. And that's a problem, because the whole point of fact-checking is to get us closer to the truth. So it's not just individual bias either. There's also the potential for organized groups to manipulate a system like community notes. You can have these coordinated campaigns to flag certain kinds of content, not because it's actually false, but because it's maybe politically inconvenient. That's a real possibility. So you would need safeguards to prevent manipulation. But how do you design a system that can like filter out those bad actors, but also allows for genuine community input? That is an open question. Something studies have suggested include weighing systems that give more credibility to notes from users with a good track record of accuracy and helpful contributions, sort of a reputation system within the platform where users earn credibility over time. Even if you did have safeguards like that in place, though, there's still an issue of scale. Can a community-based system really handle the amount of content that we see on Facebook and Instagram? Because it is huge. I mean, even with professional fact-checking organizations, with all of their resources and their expertise, they struggle to keep up with the flood of information. Can you rely on volunteers to do the same job? It kind of feels like bailing the ocean with a bucket. How do you even motivate that many people and coordinate them to actually make an impact? It's not just about building the technology. It's about actually fostering a culture. It's creating fact-checking where users actually want to participate and feel like they're making a difference. And that is a challenge that people who are making decisions like X and Meta really have not addressed. Thanks for getting Unspun with me this week. Unspun is a production of me, Amanda Sturgill, and is a proud member of the MSW Media family of podcasts. Send me your thoughts and ideas about trickery in the news on Gmail at theunspunpodcast@gmail.com. I even write back. And find this episode's show notes and more information at theunspunpodcast.substack.com. Want to learn more and get smarter? Check out my book, Detecting Deception, Tools to Fight Fake News, which is available on Amazon or your favorite online bookseller. And until next time, stay sharp, everyone.
Hi, I'm Dan Dunn, the host of What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn, a show that mixes history, culture, politics, famous people, and booze, and strains it through the cognitive mesh of my sozzled gray matter. Join me each week as I take a lighthearted stroll through the consequential role that alcohol has played through the ages and how it shaped key moments in history, quite literally changing the world. For instance, did you know that Thomas Jefferson started the first U.S. wine company in Virginia with investments from George Washington and Ben Franklin? It's true. And if you're wondering whose winery sits across the street from Jefferson's estate today, here's a hint. What's orange? President. And has a very good brain and the best people. I'll also tell you about new stuff to drink, trends, recipes, and other things that are good to know. And I'll chat up celebrities, along with the movers and shakers of the adult beverage world. And since this is a show about alcohol, I'd like to remind you that drinking can cause memory loss. Or even worse, memory loss. Where was I? Oh, right. Plugging my show. It's called What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn. It's fun. I promise. So come on, pull up a bar stool and let's kick it.